Welcome to today's podcast, sponsored by Hillsdale College. All things Hillsdale at hillsdale.edu. I encourage you to take advantage of the many free online courses there. And, of course, to listen to the Hillsdale Dialogues, all of them at hughforhillsdale.com, or just Google Apple, iTunes, and Hillsdale. Welcome back, America. I'm Hugh Hewitt. My guest is United States Senator Tom Cotton. Good morning, Senator. Welcome back.
Good morning, Hugh. Thanks for having me back on.
I'm playing the Vietnam protest music of my youth. I wasn't in college at the time that went on, but I heard it and I saw it, and I'm amazed that we're seeing it again. What is your reaction to the takeover of Columbia's Hamilton Hall this morning and to the obvious anti-Semitic actions and assaults that occurred at UCLA that went unpunished yesterday?
Hugh, from coast to coast, we're seeing nascent pogroms on college campuses. Columbia seemed to have been the lead of the most recent round. You've seen the videos I have of students draped in Palestinian keffiyeh headdress, physically preventing Jewish students from attending classes, much like Nazi brown shirts did in the 1930s in Germany. And now overnight, these radicals have apparently taken over an administration building on Columbia's campus and barricaded themselves in. We shouldn't be surprised that they're escalating their tactics when the supposed adults on these campuses won't do their basic responsibility of providing safety and security to all students and bringing in police. And if necessary, police from outside the university police department, and beyond that, the National Guard, to restore law and order. These are not criminal masterminds. They're not paramilitary militants. They are deeply troubled and fanatical students who can be easily detained and removed from these so-called encampments or from seizing the building. That should have been done long ago. I just remind all your listeners that one of the predecessors of the current Columbia University president was Dwight Eisenhower. Between his time as Supreme Allied Commander and President of the United States, he was President of Columbia for about 5 years. Just ask yourself what Ike would have done at such a despicable display of anti-Semitic criminal activity on his campus.
People should remember that Ike visited a liberated death camp and was so disgusted he brought the local German citizenry in to view what they knew was going on, but they had never articulated what was going on. I know what's going on these campuses. They're anti-Semitic, hate-filled circles of students who should never have been admitted. So the question is, what do we do? I know you have suggested taxing endowments, but that's going to hit the innocent as well as the guilty, right, Senator? What about just cutting off all federal funding to any university with more than $5 billion in an endowment? I mean, all federal funding.
Yeah, that's one option too, Hugh, but there are other things we can do specific to this outbreak of pro-terrorist fanaticism. For instance, the Department of Justice and the Department of Education should be investigating the sources of funding for these groups. These are not just spontaneous student uprisings, Hugh. I mean, just look at the pictures. They're out there in tents that cost hundreds of dollars apiece. There's credible reporting that left-wing groups like the Soros Foundation or the Rockefeller Foundation have been behind funding these groups. Second, many of these students are quite possibly foreign students here on student visas. The Department of Justice and Education should demand universities turn over the names of all foreign students who have been engaged in this kind of criminal activity, or for that matter, who have even engaged in anti-Semitic pro-Hamas rhetoric. They have no right to be in this country. Their visas should be revoked immediately, and they should be told to go home. And if they don't go home, they should be deported immediately. Frankly, these private universities should kick out students, even if they're American citizens who've engaged in that kind of pro-terrorist rhetoric. You don't have a First Amendment right against a private university to come on and advocate for Hamas or Hezbollah or other foreign terrorist organizations. And you can just imagine what they would do. In fact, you don't have to imagine what they do. Students that have had their offers of admission rescinded or been expelled from school for opposing favored left-wing advocacy groups like Black Lives Matters at some of these universities. So there's many steps that could be taken specific to these criminal fanatics, Hugh. I suspect Joe Biden's Department of Justice and Department of Education won't, but just wait till next year when Donald Trump is back in office. I can tell these fanatics on campus who are breaking the law and all the administrators on these campuses who won't enforce the law, that when that happens, winter is coming for them.
Winter is coming. Senator, yesterday, my favorite podcast is the Commentary Podcast. And yesterday, John Podhoretz, Abe Greenwald, Christine Rosen were joined by Adam White, who's a legal scholar at the American Enterprise Institute, George Mason. And they went through all of this insanity that is going on the campuses as well as in the courtrooms. And I don't know that Joe Biden can politically recover from the combination of all the things that are hitting him. Certainly he can't with Karine Jean-Pierre being his spokesperson. But do you think he can recover from this?
Well, he needs to do what he hasn't done yet, which is come out and forcefully condemn all of these anti-Semitic fanatics who are violating the law on these campuses across the country. He needs to urge local Democratic mayors or Democratic governors in these states to help the university presidents restore order. And he needs to do so without equivocating between these anti-Semites and Israel, which is fighting an existential war of self-defense against Hamas. That's exactly what he did last week. This is from a guy who supposedly ran for president in the first place because he falsely accused Donald Trump of saying there are good people on both sides of crimes and mob activity in Charlottesville 7 years ago, when, of course, Donald Trump was talking about a debate about how to handle historic statue. That's exactly what Joe Biden did, was equivocate between anti-Semitic fanatics and Israel. He needs to come out and forcefully condemn all of these anti-Semitic fanatics. But the reason he doesn't is a lot of them form a core part of his coalition. The Democrats have let this anti-Semitism fester in their party for years, the point where they now have people like Ilhan Omar and Rashida Tlaib in the Congress. In fact, Ilhan Omar's daughter, or maybe her niece, was one of these students who was instigating these things at Columbia.
It is astonishing to me, but I want to go back to first principles. Hamas is, I believe, listed by the United States as a terrorist organization. They are holding Americans hostage. Why are we interfering with Israel's ability to get them back by stopping Israel at the outskirts of Rafah? We should not. We should. The only thing that gets these hostages back is the defeat of Hamas.
Because the war in Israel, given the anti-Semitism that Democrats have let fester for years, puts intense pressure on Joe Biden's electoral coalition. And Joe Biden has elevated his own electoral interests over the vital national interest of this country for the last 7 months. And he's going to continue to do so for the next 6 months, because I think he views it in his deluded frame of mind, like many Democrats, the most important foreign policy interest of the United States is to defeat Donald Trump. And that's why they are conducting foreign policy by electoral college strategy. I should say, actually, that would be the favorable, hopeful interpretation. The less favorable interpretation would be they're using that electoral imperative to do what they've always wanted to do, as Barack Obama said, get daylight between the United States and Israel and find a way to sever the longstanding, deeply held sympathies and alliance between America and Israel.
You know, Senator, the future of Gaza depends upon the eradication of Hamas and then the cooperation of the Gulf states, which stand ready to cooperate with Israel in the rebuilding of Gaza into a terrorist-free. It could be a beautiful city on the Mediterranean. It could be a lot of different things. But as long as Joe Biden is in charge, and I think Tony Blinken and Jake Sullivan, I don't think they have a compass. I really don't think they have any strategy. Do you?
Beyond what's good for Joe Biden's reelection and trying to beat Donald Trump, no, they have no compass there at all. I mean, Gaza will only prosper when the people who live there accept Israel as a neighbor. The problem with the so-called two-state solution, Hugh, is that most Arabs living in Gaza and Judea and Samaria don't want two states. They want one state. They want an Arab state in the Holy Land. They want to drive Jews out of the Holy Land. That's why one of their anti-Semitic chants that you hear at these pro-Hamas encampments is "From the river to the sea, Palestine will be free." The root for your, just for your listeners, Hugh, the river is the Jordan River, the sea is the Mediterranean Sea, and everything in between it is the modern state of Israel. That's what Arabs living in Gaza, Judea, and Samaria largely want, and until they accept that the Israeli people are going to be living on that land, they are not going to have peace.
Now, I want to close, Senator. You're a soldier. You served in Iraq. We have a State Department that brought forward yesterday charges of abuse by five different IDF units, none of them connected to Gaza, by the way. They all go back before 2022. They've all been remedied. I listened to a long explanation of this by Haviv Reddy Gur, who served as a combat medic in one of these particularly Haredi-focused units. What are they doing at the Department of State? You have some jurisdiction over them. That spokesperson should be fired. That whole group of people should be fired. I hope that Donald Trump fires them all when he comes in, because they are undermining the state of Israel with this nonsense.
Yeah, of course there are a few. Again, it gets back to foreign policy by electoral college strategy. They're trying to find any way they can to point out to their left-wing fanatics who are taking over college campuses and chanting anti-Semitic phrases that, see, we're tough. We're tough on Israel, too. Yeah, we're supporting them in Gaza, but we can take tough measures on them as well. So they're threatening sanctions against specific elements of the Israeli Defense Forces, an outrageous position for a democratic ally that holds its own troops accountable whenever they violate military rules, regulations, or the laws of land warfare, just as we do in our military.
You know, I keep thinking of Abu Ghraib. Every military has a tail end on the bell curve of bad actors, and militaries don't want them, and they punish them. I'm sure you did as an officer in the groups that you controlled. You made sure they did. I've never seen the State Department do this before. Am I missing that they do this routinely for our allies? Because I have never seen this before.
No, Hugh, not to my knowledge. And I would suspect it's another example of how Israel is held to a singular and unique standard in the world. You know, when are the State Department has done this specific military units in other allies around the world? I'm not aware of any precedent for it.
Okay, last question. The ICC wants to issue arrest warrants for Israeli officials. Again, anti-Semites are in charge of international organizations. No surprise there. What, we're not part of the ICC. What can we do about that?
We're not part of the ICC. Israel is not part of the ICC. The ICC doesn't have jurisdiction over us. It doesn't have jurisdiction when a nation's own courts and legal system holds its leaders accountable. So I've been involved in trying to persuade the ICC not to move forward with this ludicrous action. Let me just promise the ICC, and specifically Karim Khan, their lead prosecutor, if they do take these steps, the Trump administration will ensure that Karim Khan faces charges in the United States, and he will not be able to travel anywhere without facing extradition to the United States. So if he wants to move forward with that and imperil his own freedom, I welcome him to do so. Otherwise, he should get back in his lane and focus on the real war of crime, like what Hamas has done in Gaza.
Senator Tom Cotton, that's why I want you to be the Attorney General if you're not the Vice President in the next Trump administration. Thank you, Senator. I won't make you respond to that. I'll be right back, America. Stay tuned.
Peace could only be won when the golden rule of the kingdom come. And it's 1, 2, 3. What are we fighting for? Don't ask me, I don't.
Welcome back, America. I'm Hugh Hewitt. I'm playing Vietnam protest music for the benefit of the Hamilton Hall protesters who will be arrested sometime today, I hope. I'm joined now by Dan Balz. He is the dean of America's political writers. He's with the Washington Post, and he has been to the future, and he has seen it. He went over to the United Kingdom, and Dan came back with a report, which I read every inch of. Dan, welcome back, by the way. It's been a while. It's been too long. How are you?
I'm well. How are you, Hugh?
I am great. Dan, I read your piece on the headline, British Conservative Party, like the U.S. Republican Party, is in turmoil, and I read every inch of it. You're a prophet. I am predicting they're going to get wiped out the way that the progressive conservatives in Canada got wiped out in 1993. Do you think it'll be that bad?
You know, it could be that bad. There were some polls about 3 weeks ago that, you know, one poll indicated that they'd end up with fewer than 100 seats in parliament. When I talked to people there, they were not quite that dire, but it's going to be a wipeout. I mean, I'm not underestimating it. I don't know that it will be as bad as the worst projections, but it's going to be bad. And we'll get an indication, you know, this week when they have the local elections. But everybody there, you know, is braced for, you know, everybody in the Conservative Party is braced for, you know, the worst.
And, seriously.
You know, Labor's ready to take over.
If you put Thelma and Louise, you remember them, you take them out of the car and you put in Rishi Sunak and David Cameron, they're driving right over the cliff. What really I want to get your take on is why are their voters, not the blue wall, not the red wall. The red wall fell for particular reasons having to do with Boris that they haven't been able to fall. But why are traditional conservatives deserting the Tories?
I think for a couple of reasons. One is I think that the perception of the party at this point is that it is a party that is incompetent to deal with the problems that the country has. You know, that's because of a succession of problems. I mean, I made the point that they've gone through more prime ministers since 2010 than the Republicans have gone through House speakers by a factor of one, actually. You know, in some ways, Brexit, which David Cameron instituted the referendum, hoping that it would fail and that the Conservative Party could kind of move on from this issue of their future in Europe or not, Brexit has become a curse for them, and they spent years trying to deal with it not effectively. That cost them Theresa May as a prime minister. A succession of things in which people look at the Tory party and say they're not capable of governing. And Rishi Sunak, who's the current prime minister, not that new at this point, who's an intelligent guy and a serious guy, has not projected the kind of strength or capacity to deal with it. So there are problems there. I mean, the biggest problem is, inflation. The second biggest, or maybe the first biggest, is the state of the National Health Service. So the Tories have not been able to handle these. I think there's a second reason, though, Hugh, and that has to do with what happened in 2019 when Boris Johnson was prime minister and they won a big victory. They won a big victory in part because the Labour Party then was led by a very far left, guy named Jeremy Corbyn, and he scared a lot of people, particularly kind of, the moderate suburban voters who in this country we think of as nominally Republican but have been drifting toward the Democrats. Same thing has happened there. And in 2019, there was no way that most of those voters were going to do that. At this point, they are not alarmed by the prospect of a Labour Party led by Keir Starmer, who is a more moderate leader by far than Jeremy Corbyn and has shifted the party. So those are the two main reasons, I think.
You know, Dan, one of my political addictions is to British political history. I've read a biography on every British prime minister up to Boris because Boris doesn't have one written on him. I read John Major's memoir. I mean, that's how geeky I am about this stuff. The fact of the matter is, these conservatives are not conservative. Boris Johnson wasn't conservative. He went very green. Brexit was not followed through. It was populist. They haven't been tough on immigration. Ben Wallace was a real conservative. He left. Liz Truss went too far too fast. She went overboard. They just don't have a direction. They don't have a party platform. And I don't know who's going to take over after the crash. Do you have a guess?
T.D. Badenoch is a possibility. Suella Braverman is a possibility. You might see Tom Tuggenhat as a moderate candidate who would try to, kind of lurch the party back to more traditional conservatism. But I think it's I think a lot depends on just how bad it turns out and then the kind of debate that they're going to go through. I mean, there will there may be some effort to try to lure Nigel Farage into a new conservative party. So I think that they, they're going to face a real, a real internal, as some people there said, a kind of an existential moment of what do we believe as a party and who can articulate that and who can, as a result of that, bring people back. I mean, you know this well. The Conservative Party has been, the dominant party in British politics for generations. They've clearly lost their way. And you mentioned Boris not being a true conservative. I think that's right. On climate, though, there is a much greater consensus in Britain than there is here, even on the right. About the nature of climate change and the role that government has to deal with that. So there are differences between the two parties. I noticed you said you didn't agree with my conclusions about the Republican Party. We've disagreed on this for some time.
For a long time, yeah.
But there are differences. Those parties used to be kind of moving in parallel, certainly when Thatcher and Reagan were in office. The Conservative Party in Britain and the Republican Party were kind of parallel parties and quite similar. They have diverged for a couple of reasons. One is that there is no there's no real kind of Christian right in Britain as an anchor in the Conservative Party. That's one reason. And on some of the social policy issues, even the Conservatives are in a more liberal position than the Republicans are here. So these parties, you can't quite compare them in the way that I used to be able to when I first started covering British politics.
Yeah, if you go back to Prime Minister Baroness Thatcher, she was a free market person. Free minds and free markets. Win the argument, then win the election. And she replaced Edward Heath, who had lost his way the way that Rishi has lost his way and Lord Cameron have lost their way. And I think you really do need someone who can speak to the conditions of Great Britain, newly freed from the European Union. Liz Truss tried, but she tried without eloquence and failed. It's pretty hard to be Thatcher, right? It's pretty hard to be Reagan. Donald Trump is a completely different phenomenon. I just wonder, did you talk to Ben Wallace or is he just out of the game? Because he was, to me, Tommy Tuchman is also very good. They understand the United Kingdom's role in the world is to balance the United States with the rest of Europe. They're the bridge. But they've forgotten that. Did you talk to either of the two sort of I don't want to call them hawks, serious defense-minded conservative Tories?
Not both of them, but I did talk to one of them. And they're, you know, they're quite pessimistic about kind of where this is going. And I don't think they have a great deal of optimism that their kind of their view of the world is going to prevail in a, you know, in a reconstituted Conservative Party after this election. I mean, one thing that people there are talking about is that if the election goes as badly as it goes, and obviously we don't even know quite when the election is going to be. We think it's going to be later in the year, but I think there's a possibility that it could be a little earlier. But be that
I think you're right on the latter. Yeah, I think it's going to be November.
Yeah, I think that's probably right. I know that there have been some people who have been urging number 10 to think about doing it in late June or July, depending on how the local elections go this week. But you know, there are any number of people who identify in the Conservative Party, who are active in the Conservative Party, who want to, you know, who want to prevent the party from going even farther to the right or farther, you know, or losing its way even more than it has. So there's going to be a debate, but I think that the consensus right now is that the traditional Tories will have a hard time kind of restoring their strength and power.
I had hoped that Boris Johnson was going to be a Disraeli who could take the Oxbridge element and unite it with the populist element, but that didn't work out. Let me ask you, Dan, just to close. Immigration is a huge issue in the United Kingdom, as it is in the United States. They failed to protect the shores of Great Britain from the exodus from France. Did anyone bring that up to you, that they just utterly failed to control their borders?
Immigration looms very large in this. And, you know, there's some question about what the Labour Party will do if, you know, when they come to power, which everybody assumes will happen. It is an issue. Hugh, you know this. It's an issue in all kinds of places. And it is a difficult issue for governments to handle. It's easy to say, you know, shut down the borders, but it is more complicated than that.
And the United Kingdom is full of diverse people. It has always been the crossroads of the world since the British Empire. The sun never set on it. So it's not really got any kind of racist connotation to it. It's just the overwhelming nature. Quickly, Dan, I think they're gone for 10 years. I talked to a Brit at my son's brother-in-law's wedding on Sunday, a young Brit who's a libertarian. He said, going to be 10 years. Nobody's even going to want to run it for the first 5 years. They've done this before during Tony Blair. My question is, will Keir Starmer be anything like Tony Blair, who was part of the West, a leader of the West when we needed him? Do you think Keir Starmer has that in him?
I don't know, and I think that's a big question. I'm told that he has been kind of, getting some advice from the Blair Institute, but he's not Tony Blair. He has a different upbringing. I think he's more left than Tony Blair, certainly far less left than Jeremy Corbyn. I think on foreign policy, he will, you know, he will be, you know, he will say that Britain has to take its place in the world and it has to, you know, and it has to be robust on Ukraine and, you know, and that. He's had no foreign policy experience. I mean, and as somebody said to me, in Britain, you don't get a transition. You know, the election's Thursday, and on Friday, you're in. And what happens if there's a crisis? So
yep.
We'll see. But on social policy or domestic policy, I think he's more left than Tony Blair. But he's very cautious and careful. So I don't think he's going to.
Dan, you get the crystal ball award for 2024, because you were right. They're going to get wiped out. And I'm glad that someone like you called it early on. Thank you, my friend. Good to talk to you again. Stay tuned, America. Folks, so many people I know are disheartened that our country seems to have forgotten the importance of citizenship. And they wonder how a strong sense of citizenship might be revived. That's why my friends at Hillsdale College have produced a free online course on the topic, American Citizenship and Its Decline. Taught by historian Victor Davis Hanson, the course traces the history of citizenship and explains how it is undermined in America today by open borders, by identity politics, by the administrative state, and by globalization. Americans taking the course will gain a deeper insight about the connection between citizenship and freedom, an insight they can share with family members, friends, and neighbors. Hillsdale's free online courses are an important component of Hillsdale's mission to reach and teach increasing millions of people on behalf of liberty and the American way of life. So sign up today for Hillsdale's free online course, American Citizenship and Its Decline, by visiting hughforhillsdale.com. That's HUGHFORHillsdale.com, hughforhillsdale.com. Start your free course today at hughforhillsdale.com. Welcome back, America. I'm Hugh Hewitt. Good Tuesday to you. David M. Drucker on X. He is also with the Dispatch. David, good morning. Drucker, are you a Bruin? Do I recall that correctly? Are you UCLA Bruin?
Yeah. I'm living in hell. It's nuclear winter for me.
All right, let's play the video of one random Jewish kid trying to get to class. David, you have to watch this. Let's play it. Whatever cut that is, Harley. It is. There he is. He's trying to get through the line.
You three. Oh, look, they're making their burger while I'm going this way. Excuse me. This is what they do. Everybody, look at this. Look at this. I'm a UCLA student. I deserve to go here. We pay tuition. This is our school. And they're not letting me walk in. My class is over there. I want to use that entrance. Well, I can't take it. Will you let me go in? This could be over in a second. Just let me.
All right, Drucker, you know this story. What are you going to do as a UCLA alum?
Be embarrassed. I mean, this is ridiculous. Look, this goes part and parcel with what's been happening at universities across the country, which is you have feckless administrations who have been inculcating this kind of thinking and behavior for years. And to me, Hugh, the biggest problem with these university administrations is not even necessarily their feckless leadership, but the fact that they're inconsistent. The last allowable hatred on campus is Jew hatred. And that's because these campuses see Jews as powerful and wealthy. And look, the United States has been great for Jews. I'm Jewish, so I guess I'm biased, but this has been an amazing country for Jewish people or anybody perceived as Jewish. But when you have this kind of mentality on campus that sees everything in oppressor and oppressed, this is the sort of thing you end up with. And again, there's the issue of whether or not the campuses are being properly run, whether or not our political leaders are responding properly. Then there's the issue of the inconsistency. And I think the inconsistency is a bigger problem even than how these campuses are being run.
Well, John Podhoretz yesterday on the Commentary podcast referred to the Heideggers of 2024, referring to Martin Heidegger, who was a great intellect who also happened to be a Nazi and paid the price for that eventually, because we don't much care for Nazis. These kids are Nazis who are stopping the Jewish kid from coming on. They're just Nazis. They're pro-Hamas terrorism. And there's a UCLA security guard next to him. What do you think about that? I mean, what in the world is wrong with these people?
Look, Hugh, as you know from me over the years, Hugh, I don't get opinionated too often on your show. I'm an analyst. But
right.
I just think this is This is because you have a feckless administration leadership that also doesn't necessarily disagree with the sentiments fueling these protests and this behavior. And because these administrations are filled with people who share the general outlook of the people that are doing the protesting. Now, look, I should say, I mean, I haven't been a student at UCLA in over 20 years, and that belies my age because I went back to school late. I had a professor for Middle East Studies who was a Palestinian sympathizer whose mentor was Edward Syed, who told us point blank, and he was an Israeli, and that was his point of view, and I learned a lot in his class, but I don't think you had the same sort of pervasive attitude about the Middle East, about Israel, and about Jews broadly that you now have on campus. And it's, again,
now,
it's
now, David, you are an analyst.
We're directed at any.
I want to put your analyst hat on. What do you think this is doing to Joe Biden's tailspin? Because his numbers are bad and getting worse, and Karine Jean-Pierre can't even mumble her way out of this.
Listen, I will say that his numbers are bad. They've been bad for a while. I don't know that they're getting worse. I just think that they're stuck. And I don't think, look, anything that contributes to this idea that his leadership is not proactive and in charge is not helpful. And I think you can go back and look at 2020, and you can look at how the protests that did get out of control post-George Floyd, that did devolve into looting, it was a problem for Donald Trump, even though there were some Democrats who were talking about defunding the police. Joe Biden never did. And when you're in charge, whether it's your fault or not, you tend to pay a price if voters perceive that there's something you could and should be doing, but that you're not doing. And so, look, these things could die out once people go home for the summer. Terms are ends in May. And we will see, but it doesn't help the overall picture for him. And it depends, because these are the sorts of incidents that independents and swing voters pay attention to. And I think that's what's important here.
David, I made the point to Martha McCollum yesterday that Joe Biden could not have handled this worse in political terms, because he's upset everyone on the left and everyone on the right. He's upset Jews and Christians, and he's upset Muslims. Am I wrong? 30 seconds.
Well, I don't think that there was an easy way to handle this, because if you're on the right or if you're angry about Israel's war in Gaza, there's nothing he can say. There are only things he can do that he doesn't want to do and won't do. And that's part of the problem. He should pick a lane and stick to it.
That's it. He won't pick a lane. He's in the middle of the intersection getting run over by everyone, which is why he's at 38% and falling. David M. Drucker, UCLA alum. I hope you send an email off to your college, your alma mater. I don't know if you give them money, but cut them off if you do. Gosh, what an embarrassment for California. Thank you, David. I'll be right back. America, stay tuned. Want to remind everyone, a great sponsor of the program is MyPhDWeightLoss.com. Generalissimo went on that program more than a year ago, lost 50 pounds. He's kept it off. And stress eating is not allowed, I don't believe, even though we're under a lot of...
Sure tempted to this week, aren't we?
Everybody is. But we don't... I'm sure they give you tricks of the trade to combat that, because that's one of the habits. You broke that habit. You're not going by Del Taco or Taco Bell.
Have not. No.
You haven't relapsed.
Have not relapsed.
And that is and it's healthy, it's wise, it's productive.
864-644-1900.
That's
864-644-1900.
Hi, everyone. If you've been injured in an accident that was not your fault, listen up. We have legal professionals standing by to answer your questions for free. Call now and find out if you have a case and how much it's potentially worth. Call 800-702-5400. I'm here with spokesman John Wolf. So, John, tell everyone listening who should call right now.
Well, Maria, first off, thank you for having me here. It's always nice to answer the listeners' questions. Now, as far as who should call in... Anyone who's been injured in an accident and think you deserve compensation, give us a call right now. 800-702-5400. You'll find out if you have a case and how much it's potentially worth.
Thanks, John. You heard it, folks. Take advantage of this opportunity and call now. 800-702-5400.
Advertisement sponsored by Legal Help Center may not be available in all states.
Inside the Beltway, Byron York is my guest from the Washington Examiner, Fox News contributor, of course. Byron, I was talking with Drucker earlier about his being a UCLA alum. Where did you go to college? Is it collapsing into chaos?
It is not. I went to the University of Alabama.
Oh, good.
I think one thing that's interesting that we should point out is that we are talking about what is happening on some of these college campuses, but we should really emphasize the word some. This is not something that's taking every campus by storm. I don't think it's something as wide as some of the anti-Iraq war protests in 2003 or the Vietnam War protest in the late 1960s. So I think we should point that out, that not every campus is like going bonkers the way some of them are.
You know, I did a long hit yesterday with Martha McCollum, and I had my Hillsdale College tie on to make the point that some people can proudly wear various paraphernalia and not worry about their college embarrassing themselves.
I've not heard about big protests at Hillsdale.
They're not happening. It's actually safe to be a Jew there, but it is good not to safe to be a Jew at UCLA and not safe to be a Jew at Columbia. Do you think if any Jewish kid is injured, that these universities will pay through the nose, as they should, because it's eminently foreseeable that harm will come to Jewish students at this point on some of these campuses?
Yeah, if that happens, that if it turns into actual physical injury, that changes the story entirely, because you can make the point with some of these that this is a loud protest, as the police department says when they're closing the streets. Oh, there's First Amendment activity on H Street, but obviously none of that includes any physical attacks or injury.
I want to play the clip of the Jewish kid at UCLA again for those who are just tuning in. Can you cue that up, Harley, and let Byron hear it and everyone watch it?
We are UCLA students. I have my ID right here. I'm being blocked off, not by the security guard, but by you two. You three. Oh, look, they're making their burger while I'm going this way. Excuse me. This is what they do. Everybody, look at this. Look at this. I'm a UCLA student. I deserve to go here. We pay tuition. This is our school. And they're not letting me walk in. My class is over there. I want to use that entrance. Well, I can't take it. Will you let me go in? This could be over in a second. Just let me and my friends go in to class.
We're not engaging in that.
Then you can move. Will you move?
We're not engaging in
that. Okay, we're going. We're going. I'm going in. I have my hands up. I'm not hurting them.
Then they bring in the muscle. Byron, that's textbook assault. The imminent apprehension of an unpermitted touching. I taught torts once a long time ago, and it's a really wonderful course. That's assault. When you block someone and you threaten them with violence should they proceed, it's assault. Why do you think UCLA is allowing this?
I absolutely have no idea. And one thing I was thinking as you were playing that is that one thing that is different from many protests in the past is all of the cell phones and recording devices around, so that we see this. I mean, we're not getting somebody's firsthand account of it later. We're actually seeing it happen, and it looks absolutely terrible. Now, what's that? It's the imminent what again?
The imminent unpermitted apprehension of an unpermitted touching.
Wow. Okay. Well, I've learned something this morning.
Well, battery is the touching. Assault and battery. Everyone thinks assault, yep, you have to touch someone. It's not. Assault is the imminent, unpermitted touching of someone on your person. And so they began to move when he began to move, so it's an assault. Byron, now let's turn to politics. I said yesterday to Martha, there is no way that Joe Biden could have handled the domestic side of this worse. He has managed to anger everyone. He's angered the pro-Palestinians. I don't care about the pro-Hamas people, but the pro-Palestinian people are not pro-Hamas. He's angered Jews. I think he's lost the Jews in America, and there's been no polling on this, but what do you think?
Well, you would think that the heavily Democratic Jewish vote is, that you, at least you have some elements of that rethinking what may have been their intention to vote for Joe Biden. But as usual, I'm going to say that the one single factor behind these latest terrible poll numbers, Biden's behind Trump 6 in the national poll, for CNN, behind nine if you include RFK and Cornel West and Jill Stein. The biggest single factor is inflation. It absolutely is. It's still with us. It hasn't gone away. It's cumulative. The inflation that we suffered from in 2021, 22, and 23 is still here. It's a little higher than that because of the cumulative nature of it. You look at the CNN poll, that is absolutely it. If you look at the Harvard Kennedy School of Government poll of young Americans, age 18 to 29, put out a lot of issues and said, is A more important than B? And they picked some issues that you would think would be big on a college campus, like climate change and student loans. So they said, well, is what's more important, inflation or climate change? And they said inflation.
Yep.
And what's more important, inflation or student loans? And they said inflation. So that is the biggest issue right now.
Now, Byron, when you get 130 to 140 million people voting, they're going to have a gazillion different reasons to vote. Some people aren't going to like Jill Biden, and some people aren't going to like Melania Trump. You know, I mean, you really will find every issue. But my shorthand is A, B, C, D, E, I, E, I, I. Appeasement, border, crime, D, E, I. E for education, I for inflation, I for Israel. And then I think that will cover 90% of the people voting, maybe 95% of the people voting. Some people will vote because of climate change, et cetera. Left-wingers have their own views. I don't know how he reverses this tailspin. I'm just trying to be objective. No one has ever been this low in one reelection. No one.
No, and you have, you know, some Democrats point to Obama, who got down, I think, to 46 job approval rating in 2012, and then but he was 52 on election day in 2012 when he was reelected. And you're absolutely right. So Obama popped up 6 points. Well, that's not going to do it for Joe Biden. He is really, really low. And some people are beginning to say, well, you know, at some point the cake is baked. Is it Memorial Day? Is it Labor Day? Is it some point? But the trends, the voters that actually made their decision. The only thing I would say is that the Trump situation remains, the lawfare situation remains completely volatile. But everything we've seen so far is that the Democratic lawfare against Trump has tended to increase his support, not just with core Republicans, but with some independents, too.
I have a new Fox News column up on the lawfare analysts, and I just note that it seems to me that the analysts of the left, Andrew Weissman, et cetera, they're always wrong. They're always wrong, and they can't believe it when Colorado must put Donald Trump on the ballot or when the Supreme Court demonstrates that they're clearly going to remand the Trump v. United States to the district court with instructions to consider Immunax in the official capacity. Why are the left analysts always wrong, do you think, Byron? Are they wish-casting?
I can only think that it is wish-casting. I saw a story based the other day on a prediction that Michael Luttig had made about the Supreme Court and the immunity issue. And I just thought, man, he was so wrong about the Colorado Supreme Court issue, in which the Supreme Court knocked it down 9-0, and he said they would uphold it. And this is somebody who used to be an icon on.
Yeah, but Mike is a friend of mine. I'm not going to comment on Mike, but he was completely wrong on that. And there's a lot of issues going on there. But I go to Andrew Weissman, and he's never right.
Well, Weissman, you know, he was Mueller's pit bull.
Right.
And spent all of his time, and clearly, you know, clearly Weissman, if it had been up to Weissman, they would have charged a sitting president of the United States with some sort of crime in the Mueller investigation. I mean, I think it's pretty clear about that. Or they certainly would have charged Trump, you know, at 12:01 on January 20th, 2021, when he left office. So Weissman has been just dying to charge Trump criminally with something. So he's very excited with all the indictments that have occurred, and he constantly gives the, quote, best case scenario for MSNBC viewers, which has not turned out to actually align with reality some of the time.
Byron, if you have a chance, I'd like to keep you another segment because I think the irresponsibility of MSNBC and other networks is so immense, what they're doing to people's understanding of the law. I'd like to talk about it with you. I wrote about it at length for FoxNews.com this morning, but if you've got a chance, we'll keep Byron over and talk about the responsibility of broadcast regimes not to put out propaganda. I'll be right back, America. Stay tuned.
3-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.